is I've had a sales guy, and he says, you know, when you do your sales thing, and the more you yell at me, the more I like it, because then I go out and I sell. And I thought at first he was joking, and it was like, well, a couple months later, he said it again. He says, you really need to come out and really just yell at us really hard, really get us, really make me sell something. For some reason, he could not self-motivate. He needed me to provide that external impetus. And every single time I did that, I had a bunch of guys would go to the phones and close a bunch of deals, and it would kind of wear off again. It would be highly motivated. I'd get them all hyped up and just totally inspired, and then it would just taper off again. It did not last. So that's when I really started studying this in more depth. I go, well, why is that? I mean, it was so fascinating to me. And then I started looking more at, digging deeper levels and finding out individually what he wanted. And I think he was just lazy. He said, well, you know what, I'm lazy. I admit it. I won't do anything unless I'm forced to do it. I have my comfort zone, and yet I'm ambitious. How's that for a dichotomy? I'm ambitious and I'm lazy. He needed someone to, like, he wanted to pawn off the responsibility to motivate himself onto someone else because he was ambitious, but he was lazy, and of course that's why he wanted someone else to motivate him. He couldn't do it himself. He was very undisciplined. He would drink, and he would get drunk. He'd come into work drunk, and then he wouldn't, and then he's on and off. But he was a really good salesperson. That's the funny thing was, he was really good. So I tried to connect with him. In his case, I failed because of the alcohol abuse. I couldn't, he would just get wasted all the time. I couldn't work. He was just totally irresponsible. But in general, I was trying to find out what it is he really wanted and why he wanted it, and I could have worked with him. But then, like I said, the alcohol abuse tripped it up. There's nothing there. He's not home. I've been talking to an empty box when they're doing that. But other people who were in that same position just were coddled. They had a sense of entitlement like we talked about in a previous session. They weren't challenged as youth. They were given self-esteem on a silver platter. They were given, the praise was heaped on them for the most mundane and trivial accomplishment. And they just looked at life as something that, they were just bored with life. And in fact, would become self-destructive because they're never challenged. And that's why a lot of times, joining the army or something like that was a good idea for people. Of course, nowadays you end up in Fallujah, so I'm not going to recommend that. But in general, you would get this challenge. It used to be historically the tribe would have, rites of passage for the youth, for puberty rituals. And they would make them do something crazy stuff. Go out there and stick this, thumbtack in a lion's ass and run back here. Okay, great. Whatever you're going to do. They'd have some kind of a sense of accomplishment that they had to really suffer to earn. And then they were men at that point. They were, given respect in the community, and, you get all these tattoos and things stuffed in their ears and, all those ancient rituals, and they look just like they're just like in San Francisco. Actually, that's what they look like. But worse, they're worse here. So I don't know. They were just not there. They weren't internally motivated because life coddled them. So how can you fix that problem? How can you take someone that was given self-esteem on a silver platter, coddled, never challenged, never missed a meal, always lived comfortably at someone else's expense, and they go into a job, usually they were given a salary, enough to get by on again, and they don't have to do anything. So how would you motivate someone like that? And the answer is you can't. In effect, what you have is you have a genetic dead end. You have, the gene pool has not been cleaned out. We need some chlorine in the gene pool to kill this off. And I'm sure we're going to go into a whole wave of socialization here, which, pros and cons on that, as far as how we restructure healthcare and this and that. I'm not making an opinion one way or the other. I'm just saying that we've already got this one issue that can be exacerbated by that. And that's that, they're not meant to pull their weight. We need, the armies have been cut off to a lot of people because of the way they're, utilizing the troops, so that avenue might not be open to them. There is outward bound in a very limited extent, but that costs money. I was just at one of these summer camp trade show deals where you go on there and see all the different camps, talking about what they got. Now, outward bound, they're great. I love outward bound. I think that's a great program to actually challenge kids and stuff like that. Problem is, it costs a lot of money. So So there was that. I don't know. I think in the parents, I mean, it's one thing if they listen to the parents when they grow up. But even if the parent is really driven and motivated, you know, internally motivated and, you know, hardworking, doesn't mean the kids are going to be like that because there's too many outside influences you have no control over. I thought I could control that, and I was wrong. You can't compete against their kids and their friends and the schools and the TV and everything else. You can't compete against that unless you take them off and ship them off somewhere to a desert island. And even then, they'll probably rebel. When they get teen years, they'll rebel against that. So you took them to a northernmost place, a little island, isolated place, and you raise them. They'll run away, and they'll come down to San Francisco, and you'll find them in the hate district, all tattooed and green hair and stuff. I don't know what you do about that. I think people need to discover amongst themselves some kind of purpose to their life that'll drive them. What is the purpose of your life? Fundamentally, what I decided in my youth was that your life is the sum total of your experience, and therefore what I'm going to aim to do in my life is to gain the most experiences, and money is not part of that equation. It never has been. It's like, and it's more challenges you take on. Every time I've taken a risk or a challenge, especially the one I knew I couldn't do but did anyway, that ended up being the highest value of my life, plus the people in my life that meant something to me, your family and this and that, friends. And everything else was useless. So challenges in their own sake for just to gain a better experience, a more complete experience of life. So I mean, if you wanted to make the money so you can travel or go to school and learn or to help other people, I found these kind of motivations to be the most inspirational in nature and the ones that have the strongest effect. And a lot of people just were never exposed to that type of a thinking ever. They never were exposed to the very idea that that's what they should be doing with their life. Their life was, they were drifting around looking for some direction. The religion wasn't there for them. There wasn't no village. You see a psychopathic government, which you'd obviously not want as a role model for your kids, unless you're raising a little Adolf. Yeah, they need some kind of a bigger picture in mind to put this a framework that this job is just one aspect of their life. There's a lot of other aspects of their life, and how does the work fit into that bigger picture? How can you talk about the work and diagnose your problems at work? Why am I not selling? Well, maybe it's because you don't relate to other people as people. Or maybe because you're not internally motivated because you don't care and you're fatalistic. You have no beliefs, no understanding of the universe, therefore you don't care. You're simply either a nihilist or an existentialist or I don't know. Does anybody want to comment on that?
I'll comment on it. I don't really think that there's as much, this is Sandy, is a lack of motivation. You're just motivated to accept that or to just be given it.
To just do what?
To just be handed it to you. Or to just have it on the silver platter. That your motivation is just being complacent and just taking. It's not a lack of motivation. And you can excuse it to he or she has no motivation. And I've always looked at that as if you're not don't have an internal value to do it yourself instead of saying you are not motivated. You're motivated to just accept that or to take it.
Exactly. I appreciate that. Well, taking this even one level further up, I'm trying to take this conversation on a multidimensional approach, the order of magnitude higher. We are not allowed to fail anymore. Failure is no longer an option. You can take any street corner in this country and you can put a guy who absolutely will not do anything, not lift a finger to even get a glass of water to help himself. He won't even hold up a sign to beg. And that person will not be allowed to starve in this country. If that person collapsed on a street corner with cars whizzing by, how long do you think it would take before a cop was dispatched and in an ambulance? Anywhere in this country. You cannot have a dead body or a body just laying there. Someone's going to report it. And that guy's been there since yesterday. They will take him to the hospital, ER, at great public expense. Get them all, you know, put an IV in them, rehydrate them, feed them, blah, blah, blah. Let them watch TV for 3 days and put them back on the street and he can do it again. And I'll do it again. Or you can like lift a plaque and try to beg for some money and use that to buy food with. But either way, you're not allowed to starve. There's so many soup kitchens around the country right now. Is there poor people in the country? Yes. Is there people who are malnourished? Yes. When's the last time that you've ever heard of anybody starving to death in the United States of America? And there's over 300 million people here. Anybody?
Nope.
Have you ever heard? I have never, the only time in my whole life that I've ever heard of anybody starving to death since in my entire life is when someone got lost in the woods or some nutcase locked one of their kids in a closet and killed them. I mean, it was a murder. It wasn't a starvation. It was a murder. I've seen a lot of people have ill effects, of course, malnourishment and that. They've had health effects and then directly died. But basically, starving to death is not possible in this country. You have all kinds of programs for that. You have county workers, and we have this big safety net. In nature, if you're not allowed to die, the biggest motivation for natural selection has been totally removed. From a science point of view, eliminating death from doing stupid things eliminates all possible evolution. Evolution is if you do something stupid, you die. Bye. We are not going to let you procreate and pollute the gene pool. You're a non-hacker. But that's not allowed anymore in so-called modern civilization. So at the very root level of our existence, we don't have to do anything to survive, and we all know it. And that goes for about one-third or one-half or better of the human population on this planet. In some of the poorer countries, if you don't pull your weight, they probably would let you starve. Okay? But even in India now, people really aren't starving in India or in China anymore. They're not starving in China. They have like 1.4 billion people, and they're not starving. I think our capacity to produce wealth is well beyond the famine stage. The only type of famines we have now are politically caused. One gang warlord against another warlord intercepts the UN shipments of food or won't let the UN in there to bring food in, so people starve to death. That's, you know, Somalia and all those countries, that's what's going on there. They're not starving because nobody will give them food. That doesn't happen that often anymore. It used to happen a lot. That used to be the status quo. Right? Eventually, by the way, the Norse in Greenland starved to death. They screwed it up to the point where they ran out of food and starved to death. They ate all their cattle, they ate all their sheep and the goats, and then they ate all their dogs, and then they died. And they actually had all the bones and strata and found systematically what was left. And the last guy was some dead guy on a floor somewhere. That happens a lot in a collapsing civilization. But we are not allowed to die, and everybody knows. As a matter of fact, for a lot of people who were born with the silver spoon, they can live very nice lives without ever having to do anything because mommy and daddy are rich. These are the people who then go to college, who then on paper look good, who I may want to hire, only to find out that, and they had solid jobs before, but they're ambitious only because they have this vague idea from their parents who truly were ambitious. That's how they got rich. That's how they made it. So they hear about this stuff, and on the surface, they think they're ambitious. But they are absolutely 100% not ambitious. What they are is privileged, and they were given everything on a silver platter. They never had to work, and they never have worked. And the only thing they're going to do, they want it on their salary job, is hang around. And they probably got fired from a couple of those, and now they all of a sudden want, they're ambitious, they want to work for me on a commission basis. What do you think is going to happen with that guy? He's not going to work. As soon as it gets tough, he's gone. Because why should he? Why should he bust his ass? He can always go home. And they do. They go home at age 22, at age 25, at age 28. And even into their 30s, they're living with mom and dad. Because how else are they going to be able to live in Los Gatos or Hillsboro or Ross or Belvedere or, you know, that's just around the Bay Area. Nice areas. You know, Santa Monica. Santa Barbara, nice towns where they grew up. They're not going to be able to afford to live there unless they live with mom and dad. They don't want to work. These people have been ruined, and yet there they are, and they're the ones who get to reproduce. They have all the wealth and all the money, and they're just building generations. They used to laugh at the welfare people on welfare not wanting to work. And look at all these guys, generation after generation of wasted people who don't know how to work. Well, yeah, to a certain extent that's true. The system failed them. They gave them money just to sit there. And they made it more economical for them to collect welfare than to work. Some people needed to be on welfare. Some people didn't. But there's also all these elitists in the same exact situation, and they won't work. And guess who that leaves us with? Us. We have to do the work. We have to work. How would I motivate someone that was that screwed up and inherently, basically it's child abuse to raise a kid like that and not give him any values, just tantamount to child abuse. And yet there they are. What's their motivation? Their motivation is to get something for nothing because they don't want to work, yet they want to live like their parents. But they don't want to work for it. They've had many instances where they've tried to kill their parents for the insurance money, for the inheritance or the insurance money. Because it's only that's how screwed up they are. They're so, you know, pathological that's their viewpoint. All they want to do is keep this going. And it happens not just with the elite, but it happens right down into the middle class people. The parents are struggling to maintain a middle class lifestyle, but in the meantime, the kids aren't required to do anything. Why? Because they don't farm anymore. There's no 40 acres to farm. They really don't need the kids for their labor, and they won't do chores in most instances. So basically, they sit there and play video games and watch TV or, you know, and a lot of not everybody, of course, a lot of people teach their kids differently, but it's a real battle that needs to be won to prevent that from happening to anybody. Anytime the parents have a success, the next generation behind them is at risk of taking everything for granted. The ones that aren't at risk are the ones who haven't had anything, of course, then they don't have the resources they need. But the ones who come in here from other countries, in my opinion, those are the ones that are most likely to succeed. They can come in with nothing, and you know damn well in a generation or two, they're going to be on top because they totally appreciate what they find here, which is simply an opportunity and a freedom to work without being, you know, harassed and exploited by, you know, by some overlord. They love it here. And Chinese right now, they were down for so long. They have a whole country of 1.4 billion people, all of which are hyper-ambitious. They want everything now. They want everything. Dubai, they want everything. A lot of these countries in the Middle East, they want everything. That's our world market we're up against. These are people that's like hugely ambitious. India, what is it, 1.1 billion or 1.2 billion people? You know, the ones that are in that, that have luck enough to be educated and stuff are very ambitious. They want a better life. They're going to do everything they can to get it. And they're all going to start competing with us now on everything we do here in this country. Anybody want to predict the outcome? Oh, nice work, Johnny. You drew a stick picture of a doggy. Isn't that nice? And Johnny's in high school. Oh, nice going, Johnny. That's worth an A. You pass. How do you motivate people like that? You have to hit them on a deeper level. You have to inspire them not to want to squander their own lives. You have to say, look, you were born here, right? You have a chance to do something really even more fun than watching television and smoking pot. Well, what can possibly be more fun than that? Maybe you're talking about video games? No, even more fun than doing video games and smoking dope. You know what I mean? You have to, like, give them some kind of a challenge so they get hooked on challenge again. And so they want to do something so they can understand what it feels like inside to understand a true accomplishment, to overcome a real barrier, and to see that accomplishment happen in their lives. A lot of people get that from sports. Problem with sports is I've seen tons of people who get that from sports and then turn out to be, you know, just nothing afterwards. They don't get, you know, all they want to do is talk about their high school days, pass the ball back and forth. They had this, you know, this kind of an artificial construct, the team and the coach and the players, and theoretically could have learned it, but let's face it, that's a game. How about if the kid at 16 volunteered and went to like a Peace Corps thing and actually went to another country and helped out building gardens? What do you think the kid would learn more there or by being on a soccer team? I'm not big on sports, personally. And for the main reason is that they try to force you into thinking like a group. They try to mold you into a team. You know, I never played any team sports. All the sports I did were individual sports. It was me against the environment or me against myself. It wasn't, you know, me and the team doing this. And that's really great if you're going to go work at a Fortune 500 company. But I think, you know, when you're going to be an independent person, you're starting to create things. I think it's more important to do things otherwise. My opinion. Anybody got a comment on that?
I would tend to agree with you, other than I've had many coaches tell me, you know, the pull from it, never give up. Never give up. You only lose when you give up.
I know, I got that out of a Chinese fortune cookie once. I mean, I'm serious. So what? Never give up. Okay, that's nice. I'm not trying to argue with that. I understand that. You're going to go out there and never give up. And you do get something out of that. You get some character building out of that. I'm just trying to say that the same people went to high school sports, or a lot of them just went to college and came out and are useless. They have no values. They have no drive in life. Everything's been handed to me. This sport thing didn't do it by itself. I'm just saying I don't think it does it.
Well, also, Paul, this is Roy. The difference is, you know, when you're in a team environment, if you slack off, someone else is going to cover for you. When you're in the boxing ring, it's you and your abilities against that person who could knock your head off, and there's nobody that's going to back you up in that situation. So I can see that.
Yeah, I like that a lot. That's a very astute point. Very good. That's the difference. I mean, I played table tennis, tennis, shooting sports, water skiing, snow skiing, karate, all kinds of motorcycles. Everything I would do would all be like one-on-one, me versus nobody, really. A lot of sports were me just by myself, you know, which I enjoy because it's me versus the challenge. Okay? So what would give a person ambition who lacks ambition? He would have to understand more of the meaning of life. He would have to discover within himself some higher purpose. And a true inspirational speaker then would try to make inroads on that intractable. And no offense, I know a lot of people are religious, but, you know, you can do religious inspiration, and you could turn a lot of people almost into a cult-like trance with it. It does not make them ambitious. It does not make them really challenge themselves. A lot of religions say, if you believe this, you're all good to go. You're good to go. There's nothing left to do. I'm not going to argue religion with you. I'm just going to say this. When a religion tells you that as long as you believe, you are now basically saved and good to go forever, then why bother? What does that do strictly from a sociological standpoint, not a religious argument? Because I could care less what religion you have. I've studied all kinds of religions. But just look at it from just that one narrow point of view. What does it do to someone when you say that if you believe, and don't automatically assume I'm talking about the religion you think I'm talking about, by the way, there's lots of religions that say this, that you are now good to go, you don't have to do anything else, you're fine. I don't understand, why be born in the first place? Why not just be born, say that, and get out of there? Go on to the next one. What do you need to do? Nothing. You don't need to do anything. The universe, everybody loves you now. God loves you. You're all good to go. Does that affect that person's ambition, yes or no?
Yes.
Why would you do anything when you already know, quote-unquote, you're going to heaven, or even better, all you need to do is strap some dynamite to yourself and go blow up some Jews, right? Or American troops over here, or these other guys, or whoever they are. A lot of people do suicide bombing nowadays. And you're going to go, you're going to be martyred, and you're going to get the 40 virgins and the suburban housing tract and the Porsche Turbo and the big screen TV, and you're going to get the Wii and the PlayStation, right? The Wii is for when you actually want to get your fat ass out of a chair and dance around. You can wave those things around. The PlayStation is when your fat ass wants to go back into a chair, okay? That's an inside joke for people who have video game playing teenagers around. Like I do. But you don't have to do anything anymore. You are now given a blank check, free pass on life. It doesn't matter what you do, rich or poor, as long as you believe you're going to heaven. I personally think that takes care of a large swath of the human population as far as any possible ambition would go. I'm more inclined to believe that you are supposed to make the best possible use out of your life and strive to achieve your highest possible goals. Then you can say, it was like the prodigal son, right? The one son squandered his money and the other one invested it wisely. What were you supposed to do with that gift? So if you have brains and talents and skills, and you could have made a great life. You could have helped and touched many people, and then you didn't. If you want to put it in religious or morality terms, I would consider that a sin, quote unquote, that you were, it's almost a sin. Let's say you were in a desert, and you had like a bunch of extra water that you really didn't need, and you saw people literally dying of thirst at your feet, and you never give them, you didn't offer them some water. Or let's say you had some really critical information in your head. You had terminal cancer, but you had this great thing that you've been working on, and you decided that rather than give it to someone else and not benefit, you're going to take it with you, you're just going to die and take the knowledge, like the cure for cancer with you. Who would consider that a great crime?
Yeah, you bet. Absolutely.
Would you consider it a sin or a crying shame or a crime against nature or whatever, a poke in the eye of the universe, to have talents but not use them to help others or at least to maximize your own personal accomplishments in life and to actually use the life you were given? I mean, do you think you're like a sheep that were just born and you should just graze? And that's good enough. That's all you need to do is graze. And as long as the grass is green, the water drops, then I'm good to go. And by the way, at the end, I'm going to that big sheep heaven in the sky. Forever. No problem. So I'm assured. Do you think that's your life? So what I would do is I would find that person with no ambition. I'd explain the situation to him. I'd say, your parents worked really hard. They were ambitious to get what they got, and you got a free ride. And even if you take their money and you buy coke and dope and smash up cars and get yourself in trouble and just or hang around for the next 40 years, at the end, when you're 70, 80 years old and you look back, you know what you're going to see? It's going to be the biggest disaster of your life is to look back at a life misspent, challenges unmet, goals, not even try to attain the goals. All you're going to see is nothing, and you're going to wish death comes sooner. You're going to want to kill yourself, as opposed to looking back and say, even though I had all these advantages, I said, to heck with it, I'm going to go forth, and I'm going to find out what I can personally do for myself, not to impress anybody else or to have the money, which I already had, but just to my own personal goals. Maybe I'm going to go into scientific research like an amateur archaeologist or something. It's not for the money. I already got money. I have a trust fund, but I'm going to go out and just do things. What would you rather do? What do you think you're going to want to say? And if they really don't matter, you know what I mean? Then what I would do is organize a trip to Kenya, a safari. Tell them that we'll have a big bong in the back of the Jeep. I'm going to take about 20 of these people there. I'm going to drop them right off in the middle of a lion, you know, den. Let the lions have them. Kind of weed them out of the gene pool. That'd be nice. Anyway, that's just my opinion. I may be wrong, as Dennis Miller said. Any last comments or suggestions or anything else you'd like to see covered on this talk? Motivation.
Paul, question? How does the degree of difficulty of your task affect motivation?
Well, that's a good one. Basically, in direct proportion, the higher the difficulty, the easier it is just to give up. You're externally motivated to give up relatively easily. If you're internally motivated, you'll keep pushing it, you'll find a way to do it as far as you could possibly take it. And so that's actually a really good way to look at it. The challenges that you're going to meet are going to be, you're only going to meet those, the ones that you are willing to pay the price for. And that price, in fact, represents your internal motivation. The price can be just, I have to put off other things. Right? If I go to night school, go to college, then I can't hang out with my buddies. You know, take all the weekends off. I have to, you know, watch TV at night and hang out at the bar. I actually have to, like, do, you know, work all day and then go to school. That's really a high price to pay to get a college education if you need to work. And yet people do it all the time. And I did it for 5 years. Worked full-time and went to night college. That's how I know that trick. Started with a GED. And before that, I dropped out of high school. Because I didn't care. And that was in the beta, you know? Anybody else? Anybody want to know what kept me going throughout 5 years of night school and working full-time?
Yeah.
I was brought up in Detroit, and I decided that I tried working at factories, And I looked around, I says, if this is my life, I'm literally going to kill myself. I was 17. I says, literally, I'm going to die. I'm going to kill myself. I will not do this. I cannot stand factory work. I just couldn't do it. I said, I got to get the hell out of here. And so I got my GED at 19. I started going to night school. And about 6-7 years later, after working on and off and going to night school at night, I graduated. I got 4 associate degrees and I moved. And that was it. That's how I left Detroit. I got the hell out of there. I mean, it was like on, off, depression, prosperity. Like right now, it's depression again. It's a big roller coaster. You know what I mean? It's not so much that Michigan itself is all that bad. It's just that it's, you know, I just don't like factory work, and I thought it was a dead end, and, you know, I was right. It was a dead end. It's an obsolete economy, you know. And I had to get the hell out of there, so it was literally, for me, it was life or death. That's what motivated me to go to school. I literally, literally had it down to life and death. It was very difficult, very stressful. It was not a pleasurable thing. Also, I needed to get really good grades so I can go on to, you know, continue with my school. And that was where I got myself, extricated myself out of that situation. Because I had some really crappy jobs at steel factories, you know. One of my jobs was at a Monroe Steel, Monroe, Michigan. It's north of Toledo. And they were making, like, cast metal, castings. And so my job was to take an electric hoist and hoist up a big truck, rear end casting, rear end axle casting, and hit it with a sledgehammer, getting the sand out of it. That was my job. While hot metal was swinging through the air, you know, 4,000 degrees and shit. And I was literally like working in hell. It looked like hell. A lot of guys loved that. They thought this. They liked steel factories. I was miscast in a steel factory. Exactly. Pardon my pun, but you know, I said, this is it. I got to get the fuck out of this. Seriously. And that was my motivation. My motivation was like basically life or death. I just could not see myself living like that. And I would do anything to get out. And there's a lot of people that come up here from Mexico and Honduras, and they got shit. They got nothing going for them, nothing. And they pay money, they sneak in this country, and they do anything. They're cleaning toilets with some Motel 6. It's better than what they had there. Otherwise, they'd go back. So you can imagine what they had going for them. And I'd like to see some of these rich, elitist, snobby little bastards. I'd like to take them down to Honduras and let them do whatever these guys were doing. I'll say, see these guys cleaning your toilets at your motel? I want you to go live where they came from because they thought this was better. So I want you to go down there and do their job now that they're up here doing yours. I'd like to see them do that for a little while so they have some comprehension of what they got. Right? It's a matter of re-educating people, and this self-esteem movement has got to stop. There is no self-esteem except that which you get by earning it, okay? If you want to set up contests between 30 kids and there's one winner, to make let one winner get an award, and that's it. The rest get nothing. No second place, no nothing. Or quit setting up those contests and just have a high standard, let all 20 aim for it. That's what I set up teams. I say, you know, here's the standard. Go. You're not competing against anybody else on any of my sales teams. I don't care about competition. Because what does that mean? You know, the reason I don't have these competitive contests, if you've noticed, is because so what? It's an attempted external motivation, which is doomed to failure. All you're going to do is reward one guy, probably unnecessarily, because the only person who won that contest was internally motivated to start with. And when they were doing that with me, and that's how I learned this, I always knew I was going to be number one anyway. I was just free money. I laughed in their face and took their money. And everybody else was even further demotivated by the whole experience of not only watching me win but get extra money for it. And that's what happens now. They were demotivated, which was okay when I was a rep, when I'm trying to build a team. Why would I want to demotivate everybody but the one guy who really didn't need a reward anyway? And that's what I think of contests. You'll never see me do a contest. My contest is you better haul ass or you're fired. There's your contest. Well, I thank you for your participation, and hopefully you found it helpful. Anybody find it helpful?
Always.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, thank you very much.
Great.